This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So it's all for play for still.
I think so. Do you want to bet against us?
Hello, Aston Villafan.
Hello.
This Saturday afternoon, this very uneventful Saturday afternoon, can't think of anything that could have possibly happened. It could have put people in an absolute belter of a good mood.
I just think it was so quiet that we just thought we'd come on and talk to people because we've nothing really else to discuss. Oh, Jesus. Jesus, Neil. A ball just flew over my head.
I wonder where that came from.
Jesus, it only took, 4 hours to get to Ireland?
Oh, my God, Paddy. Paddy, I'll tell you something. I went down straight afterwards at the Villa View with Dan and the Villa View, and I mean to say I was absolutely shaking with excitement about beating Aston Villa. Like, I saw Dan Bard, or Dan Rawlinson said that it's only the second time in his lifetime Villa have beaten Man United, and to be honest with you, it's a fucking historic win. It's a pretty historic win. And look, other teams might look at it and go, lads, look, you know, you got bailed out by a bad penalty miss and whatever. And I've gotten some of that from fans of other teams. Do you know what? As you said beforehand, if you used this phrase in the pre-match, I couldn't give a shiny shit if other fans think that we got lucky. Because do you know what? We got 3 points. That's what we got. And we were by far, we were a better team. We were better set up. We had more will to win. We had the better chances. And by God, am I milking this for all its worth for the rest of this weekend, Paddy. Talk to me.
We have to do the old tradition first because
yes.
After the game, I felt it was a bit too early and I could have been in bed by this stage if I'd started drinking. So I took the kids to McDonald's to celebrate.
Excellent.
And we went to Smith's Toys, which for anyone that's outside Ireland is a big toy shop. And
Ken Black's in the UK, isn't it?
Oh, is it?
Black in the UK, I think.
Or if you're in Port Leash, it's Ken Black as well.
Yeah.
No, there you go. So that's where we went today. And here we go.
Been a while, Paddy. It's been a while since we've got to hear one of those.
And I think this one is going to be sweet.
Absolutely. I went down and I said, "Fuck! I forgot to get any cans or anything like that because I'm going to enjoy this afternoon. I'm going to enjoy today." And all I had was a bottle of something in the fridge, which is very rare for me to have bottles. I'm just not a big bottle drinker. And it's of some, put it this way, it's supposed to be Corona, but whatever shop I bought it in anyway, I had to change the name. So put it that way.
Well, don't do what I did. If you go to Lidl, they have a big 6-pack of 500ml Pilsner, and I'm there going, "Ah, sure, that's grand. I'll drink a few of them."
Fine bottles.
And I drank 4 of them last night, and I nearly passed out, pissed. They were that bloody strong. So, anyway,
I'm gonna walk across the Lidl.
Cheers.
And you know what? I had to do. I don't know. Does anyone else get this? But you know, if you watch a game early in the day, you have to do jobs then around the house afterwards to make up for it. It's kind of like penance for getting to watch, for having getting to watch a match, especially one early in the day. And what I did was I decided beforehand, and I put out the seed, and I went, I said, you know what? I think we should change where the drinks cabinet is, because you know we should change our own stuff in the kitchen, you know. So that's what I got to do. And as I was doing it, I was like, yeah, I'm gonna drink you later on. I'm gonna drink all of you. I'm gonna take a few shots of you, and then I might mix you in with you, and then I might drink some of that as well. So that was my that was my little sneaky way of getting to do having to do jobs before I get to sit down again. But anyway, less about that. Jesus, my domestic bliss that I have here. There's less about that. Paddy, Jesus, like talk to me about that performance. We were kind of on the fence, obviously, as most Villa fans were before the game.
Yeah.
But my God, I think that we looked so assured on basically in everything we did today, and that formation looked rock solid against their star-studded team.
Mm. And look, we've played it now against big teams. It's been successful, albeit we haven't won all the games. But going out of the cup on Wednesday night is now completely forgotten about for me. And team selection, what team selection? I couldn't give a shiny shite. We are, after beating Manchester United for the first time in 12 years, you know, it's hard to put into words how fucking big that is for someone living over here, when everyone you bump into today is either Liverpool or Man United, wherever you go. So this is an incredible result, but I just hope it's not a flash in the pan. I want us to go and do it week in, week out, and get into those European spots, because what are we, seventh now? I don't know what where we were after.
We're didn't watch any football. West Ham game. Yeah, after West Ham.
I didn't watch any
West
football. Ham. I just said, you know what? I just need to get out and get some fresh air and stuff. So
it would pale in comparison to what we saw in Old Trafford, Petty.
It was just incredible. It really was. And, you know, the game had a lot going for it. It was enjoyable to watch. There was some funny decisions. There was some good decisions. He didn't have his worst game, Mr. Oh, what were they calling him? Michael Dean? Leon Osman decided to call him Michael Dean today. He obviously has
I was watching a stream that had two Spanish commentators on it from the US. Right. It was,
I don't know where my stream was from, somewhere in BeIN Sports or one of them. And I think it was Leon Osman. They kept calling him Leon anyway. So maybe he was just being respectful to his fellow Merseysider. But so we beat 12 men, Neil.
And look, dude, we did, and I know we're harping on about.
Sorry, that's a bit harsh, though, right?
Yeah, because
we beat 11 men because we only had 10 men on the pitch.
Yeah, there was one very, very conspicuous.
Sure, the best player in the world. Fuck all used to you when you're playing Aston Villa, though, isn't he?
I think everybody. We're back again. Yeah, I think there's a little bit of an internet mishap there. But they only had 10 men on the pitch because there was one person whose absence was very notable on the field. Very, very notable. And it's probably because he came up against the brick shithouse.
Yeah, and he was in his pocket all day. Yeah. Absolutely fantastic. It really is.
Paddy, this isn't news to me or you. As I said, I got my dates wrong. So on the Villa View, when I said that the Courtney House fan club was closed, I meant to say from the 30th of August. So there's no bandwagon jumpers jumping on now. But I said by mistake the 31st of September. So looks like we've extended the opening hours for the fan club applications. But my God, look, he had a serious performance. I think the whole back three had a serious performance today. Ezri Konsa's balance when he's chasing people down is just fantastic. There was one where Mason Greenwood, and I know I was talking about Housen, I'm just going to talk about Konsa, but it's just after jumping into my mind. Mason Greenwood picked the ball up on the right-hand side of the field, and he dummied to take a shot, and then he went across the goals. And Konsa not only kind of jinked to the left when he dummied, but also then jinked back to the right, got his feet sorted, cut across House, who kind of backed then to get another block in if there was going to be another shot. And then Mason Greenwood then fainted for a shot again. Konsa did the exact same thing, shimmied both sides and stayed on his feet. His balance is unbelievable. And Courtney House, incredible. I must say, Courtney House has found an extra yard or two of pace. And I think... I think to be fair to him, you know, he's been injured quite a lot over the last 12 or 18 months. You know, he was absent for, there was like a 4 or 5 month period there where we just kind of half forgot about him, or, you know, he wasn't anywhere near the team because he was injured. But he looks like he's a solid individual now, and there's no injuries lingering over him. He's back up to full fitness, and he's got a yard of pace back because he ran down Mason Greenwood as well at another instance in the second half. And, you know, I must say that back three is rock solid, and they're all leaders and all top class individuals. So super proud of him. Super proud.
Don't forget, there was a period when he joined force where I probably even made the statement, I don't want to see Courtney House anywhere near this team because he was as shaky as fuck when he started.
I'd left back though.
Yeah, but the guy is incredible. Absolutely incredible. It's a joy to watch today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's get to a couple of comments before we start talking anymore, because if we start talking, we won't get to any of them. Sean Green says, hi lads, absolutely proud of the team and the coaching staff. We're bossing it. And just to mention again, I did call it last night, 1-0 House from a corner. Check the comments. You know what? we might just have to do that, but fair play. We'll actually, do you know what? We won't. We'll take your word for it, Sean. We'll take your word for it, but fair play.
Neil, imagine with our bet earlier. Imagine we
there's a lot of people in the comments here mentioning that too.
Oh man.
Seb says Dougie and House need new deals ASAP or we riot. Yeah, and Douglas Luiz is somebody I want to talk about as well, because there's two aspects of his game I think that we haven't seen since he joined the club that have just become really prevalent since the international break. I definitely want to talk about it. And Wepif says, up the Villa if only need a bet on House to score and win 1-0. Yeah, we'd be wealthy, man. Or the Aston Villa Foundation would be probably 1,500 euros better off, I think.
I was only brave enough to put a euro on, mainly because that's all I had in my account. So I would have been 305 euro up on what I started the day with, which would have been nice.
Yeah. Would have been exactly. Rob Henry says, fully deserved win. We were the better team. I would say every one of our players outperformed every one of theirs. I think that's probably a fair cop. Maybe apart, and I know he missed the penalty, but Bruno Fernandes I thought was really good for them today. And probably he's probably better than one of our midfielders somewhere in there. But I completely agree with the sentiment. We came with a full team performance. They came with a performance of individuals, I think, today. And I think that was quite apparent at times.
Neil, you mentioned Bruno Fernandes there, right? Just picture him in your head now. What's the first word that comes to your mind?
Penalty.
Mine is prick. He's an absolute prick. And you know what? We need a few pricks on our team too. We need that guy that's in front of the referee whinging and moaning and bitching. We don't do enough of it. Every time, I don't know where he must make up all his mileage throughout the game on running after the referee after a decision's been made. He just always appears there. No matter where on the pitch there's something given, he's there. And how glorious was it to see Emmy get in his head? I thought it was absolutely majestic today.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that in a moment because I think that deserves its own little piece. Tom, good to see you again. Great stuff buzzing up the Villa. Yeah, Mike Dean was, you weren't wrong. Mike Dean was practicing. He's pointing to the spot for sure. And he got to use it just before the game was finished. Ryan says, definitely worth getting up at 7 a.m. to watch this. You know what? Absolutely. I'd love if it was 7 a.m. That would mean I'd still have all the rest of the day to go drinking. But it's nearly 7 p.m. now.
I would definitely be in bed by now if it was 7 a.m.
Exactly. Yeah. Think of the positives, Ryan. There's more positives in this than you think. Seb Blackmore says Mike Dean came up short today. Fernandes no longer. Yeah, look, as I say, there's a lot of people. I think Southgate said he would have put his, or it was either Southgate or it was Solskjaer said they would have put a mortgage on, and I think it was Southgate for some reason said they would have put a mortgage on Bruno Fernandes to score. But it wasn't to be. It wasn't to be. Soupy Mark, I'm going to get to your comment in a moment because we're going to discuss that in a second. But Simon says, was it 305-1 odds for 1-0 and Konsa or House? Unfortunately, it was Konsa.
I think it was both. I think they were both the same.
Yeah. They were both 50-1 just to score.
But we did Konsa. I did Konsa. Did you do it? You did?
Yeah, I did Konsa. Yeah. I put a fiver on Konsa. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. This is it. We will come back to this again. If we win, it's always excuses in the other team, but the tide is turning and people, pundits, etc. will start to give us the credit the players deserve. I hope so. I don't see it turning.
I'm looking forward to match of the day because...
I am, but...
I watched Alan Shearer, the first match of the season, say, oh, Aston Villa, they'll be all right. And I went, you fucking prick. Of course we'll be fucking all right. We'll be better than all right. We'll be top half of the fucking table. Anyway, it just annoyed the shit out of me, you know. Don't worry about Aston Villa, they'll be all right.
Yeah.
Fucking right we will.
Seeker says, really pissed off when players are left out of the Chelsea game, but this more than made up for a super performance. Well done, Dino and the lads. And actually, I'm before I get into any other comments, I'm going to say this, that, you know, in a way, and I know a win on Wednesday would have been obviously way better, but in a way, we've probably galvanized this team and gotten a lot of good sentiment towards this team by having an unlucky loss against Chelsea with our second squad and then going out against United with our first squad and winning, because it shows that our second squad can compete with one of the best teams in the league and our first squad can beat one of the best teams in the league. So from a psychological point of view, and I know that Dean Smith is and his backroom team, they do quite a lot of sports psychology, which is something that's actually new to Aston Villa, would you believe? And I think it's absolutely mental that they haven't been doing this before, that sports psychology hasn't come into it. And I know there is a small bit of sports psychology and that they do heavily lean upon that. But from that point of view, the players like Sanson, like Nakamba, like who else is there? Like Courtney House, Jed Steer, Cameron Archer. Cameron Archer got minutes again today. On the back of scoring that header against Chelsea. So the net positive from this is those players that played on Wednesday night know they can mix it with the best. And then our first team went out there and they know they can beat the best because they did it to teams last year. And now they're after beating a team they didn't beat last year. So you could call that progression in a sense. You could call that progression for many goals that this team would have set itself. So excellent stuff. I really, 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 really love this win. And I love the context behind this win, I suppose, as well. and says 12 years I've waited to have the upper hand in this house up there with beating Tip and Hurling. So for anybody who knows, Limerick Hurling and Tip Hurling don't really get on. They're like the United and Villa, let's just say. So yes, exactly. I completely agree with your sentiment there and too with that one as well. Del Boy, we all knew we were playing early today, but we sort of thought it was good. It was good to drink last night. Yeah, exactly. But do you know what? This just means you got to have the hair of the dog today, and I just got off
the phone to Del Boy before we came on air, so the two of us were having a little buzzing session before we started here.
Good so stuff.
He's heading off to Spain tomorrow, so I hope he's a lovely holiday.
Yeah, exactly. Guys, what I'm going to do is I'm going to come. Oh, no, I want. There's only about four or five left. Alan Horan says, result was fantastic. Performance was even better. We outplayed United. This is an interesting question. I think this is probably where we'll start to get back into it now. But does House keep Tu and Zabi out of the team next week, Paddy, do you think?
Probably not in the fact that we've got two left-footed centre halves today. I think that might play on his mind a little bit. But who are we to second guess the King Dino? He can do as he pleases as far as
that's an interesting thing you've said there, Paddy. Why would having two left-footed centre halves as opposed to having two right-footed centre halves make a difference when one of them plays in the centre? Is it just the fact that just the fact of players probably naturally thinking the ball is going to be played by a right-footed player, and is it more the delivery and the distribution from the centre halves?
I always look at left-footed players as shielding the ball the same way. So and right-footed players, because I'm left-footed, I can say this: right-footed players tend to lead off both foot, whereas left-footed players predominantly lead off their left foot, so their back foot is their left foot every time when they're starting. So this it makes them a little bit more predictable at the start from a defensive point of view. And I remember when I was playing, a good coach having a word with me about it and changing how it mix up how you turn to face or whatever. And because of that, there's a lot of in the mindset of a coach to say, two left-footed centre-halves is probably a bad idea. So two out of three mightn't be too bad, but if it was two out of two, it might be a little bit different. But I believe that might play on his mind a little bit. I think it would be very rare to see two left-footed centre-halves.
That's super insight, because I suppose you think, because the majority of people would be right-footed, that if you had a left-footed player, naturally players' brains would go, right, I got to close down his right foot. Next thing all of a sudden you're going, oh, where the hell's he gone? He's left-footed, you know, and you probably, I suppose, you see that further up the field, but defending is different. And that's why I asked the question specifically, because, and that's a really interesting thing you said, because obviously if someone's bearing down on a defender, maybe the first thing to do is obviously shield the ball first and then get the ball away. And that's a really interesting point. Never would have thought of that in a million years.
In lower leagues, you'll see an awful lot of, if there was a really attacking left winger, that they would put a left-footed right back out there. You wouldn't really see it at the upper echelons of the game, but it's the psychology of it. I learned a lot about it when I was doing my coaching badges, and it is something you see if you went down to maybe non-league or League of Ireland or something like that. It does happen a lot.
Interesting. Once again, Paddy, let's talk about performance, and we'll get back to some of the comments here. And the reason being is some of the comments are going on to some other talking points, maybe after the game and so on. And we'll get to that. It's impossible to stay chronological with this one because I'm too excited. But
stay chronological anyway, Neil. Do we?
No, I never do. Paddy, perception is reality, isn't that what they say? And probably perception is reality with an awful lot of what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said, and we'll get onto that in a moment as well. But talk to me, Paddy, about the overall performance. I suppose, you know, if we go from back to front there, Emi Martinez is an absolute boss man. You know, that's all I describe him as. He's like, he really does feel like the daddy of this team for some strange reason. He feels like he's the guardian, and obviously he's guarding the goals, but like, he feels like he's the guardian of all this, of everybody on the team. And he's keeping everyone in the straight and narrow. And I just love him. And then when he has these outbursts every so often, you know, it just makes it all the sweeter, because it just shows how much the game means to him. Mm-hmm. But talk to me about Martinez. How do you think he went on today?
Well, he didn't have a whole pile to do. He had a couple of shots fizzed at him, handled them very well. There was one in particular in the first half, I'm going to say it was, that he battered away very early on, maybe 20 minutes in. I actually made notes today, but the notes are down in the sitting room, so that was good planning out of me. I think they go out the window when we have a performance like that. There was definitely I think it was Greenwood shot across him, and he made a great save.
Yeah.
And look, he bosses the game. He organizes the defense so well. They look so more comfortable with him and behind him. He's just a joy to watch. You just feel, even as a fan, so much more comfortable when he's there. He's just unbelievable talent. We'll get to the penalty later on.
Yeah, 100%. Because the shithousery that went on around the penalty pre and post was just, and it shows that we went there. We talked about not being intimidated, and we'll get to that in a moment as well. Let's talk about, I spoke about the back three. I jumped the gun. I spoke about the back three. Let's talk about the two wing backs, because I think one had a much better game than the other, but I didn't think the other was poor, if that makes sense. I think Cash was absolutely outstanding. Matty Cash is a right-footed version of Andy Robertson, and we're watching it unfold in front of our eyes. He is everywhere. I think he's fantastic. I thought Target was good. I thought he was all right, but like, just Matty Cash is levels. He's up there with the best right backs, I think, in the Premier League at the moment. And it's funny, because we would have said last year Matty Target was up there with the best left backs in the league.
Absolutely. Matty Target had a lot more protection last year in that nobody was bombing down his side because they knew they were going to leave Jack exposed.
Yeah.
But let's give credit where it's due. I text you during the game and said to you, how long will it be before Matty Cash is linked with a top four, top six team? It's going to be in the next window. And as far as I'm concerned, he should be giving them the two fingers, because we've given him the platform to go and do what he's done. And he was absolutely, he's been absolutely brilliant this season, all season. Target hasn't been at his complete best, but absolutely fine with me today. Wan-Bissaka unusually had a couple of goals off him, so he must have felt he was a weak link, but it just nothing came off for him down that side. So no problem with either. Target was quieter, obviously, of the two. And maybe that is the tendency that when you got three at the back, to let one of the fullbacks do the majority of the attacking.
Yes.
So it seems to be Matt Cash the last few games has been allowed to bomb on, and Target just took in nice and neat to make it a four on the break, which is technically what happened. It's very rare you see the two of them in the final third. Mm. Apart from the ball that went across the box, and Matt Target. And look, he's probably the last fella you wanted to see arrive at the back post like that to finish off. And it was harder than it seemed, because if he'd just tapped it in, it would have been blocked because the guy got across in front of him. So he hit it as best as you could. You needed to get under it to lift it over the leg that was in front of him. So, and I'm not calling him out on that either.
Absolutely
fine. Yeah,
it happens. Better players than Matt Target. You know, I think it flashed across. The defender stuck a leg out, and it literally misses the defender by a hair's breadth, and then it comes to him. Like, it almost comes to him quickly in that instance, because he was so close to the defender. But no, fair play to Matt Targa. Matt Targa was good today, as I say. I do think, though, that as you said, and you made a great point there, they had a go at him today, just like teams had a go at Ashley Young the last day as well. And he was kind of, I think he was blown by the end of it, you know, as in, you know, which is no fault to him, you know. Yeah. Maybe the fitness levels do need to come up a small bit with Matt Target, but
I think he's fine.
Yeah, but I think his fitter last year is kind of what I'm saying.
I think you'll see a throwback to last year once Leon Bailey's in front of him, because he will give him acres of space to work into and give him and take so much pressure off.
Jesus, the ghosts are after turning on my other computer here beside me. Don't know what happened there. Bloody North Koreans are after hacking into my other computer again. And you said there about Leon Bailey as well. I have no idea where the hell Leon Bailey plays in the five, but anyway, that's a conversation for another day. Actually, it's not, because did anybody see Leon Bailey's Instagram today to see him celebrate the goal? Oh, it was absolutely hilarious. He was watching it as the goal went in, and then he started doing a kind of a mock kind of English accent. He was like, "All right, mate." Like that. It was absolutely hilarious. But he looked like he was having the time of his life. I just wonder why he wasn't in. He wasn't in the stadium because it was an away game. But great to see him really enthusiastic. And he was up and he was dancing around his sitting room. But just like the rest of us, Leon Bailey was watching it on a laptop as well. So.
I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, doesn't matter about how much cash you have. Sometimes you still got to get down and dirty and got to trawl through the internet for a stream. Let's move on to the three midfield, Paddy, because I think that this was an absolute jewel in the crown today, the way the three midfield played. And I thought they were selfless today. Mm. But talk to me about the three and how you think they played.
Well, I'm going to start at the top of the tree, and I'm going to go for JJ. I thought it was one of his quieter games. Mm-hmm. I thought the game bypassed him an awful lot. And I remarked to Stephen after about an hour, this game is passing him by. We hadn't seen much of him. He kind of Ronaldo-esque, didn't see much of him. But it was no sooner out of my mouth than he started to get involved in everything. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, he was picking up the ball. He was coming a bit deeper, looking for it and stuff. He was working hard. Like, We know what we're going to get with him. It's just going to take a bit of time, and he's going to be a world beater. I've absolutely no doubt in my mind. He's just doing everything the right way. It's just going to take a little bit of time for him to find his feet and do it consistently. But luckily, the two guys in behind him, just magic. John McGinn is just outrageously good this season. And he had his little period where he got pissed off at Mike Dean and went a bit apeshit. For me, kind of needs to eradicate that from the game.
You said he needed bricks. He just took out his ire on the wrong person, the wrong people.
That's not the way we need to take it. Like, by all means, go and fucking buckle Fernandez if you want. But he didn't exactly buckle him. He just kind of, you know. But that was out of frustration at an absolutely ridiculous decision by the most ridiculous referee we've ever been given. He was right in line. Pull the arm. If he was any, I saw it. If he's any closer to the goal, that's a red card.
And 100%.
Yet that fucking idiot didn't even see it. Yeah. He's fucking useless. So he basically said, sorry, John, you were faking. You were never going to get to that ball.
Yet he'd taken it around Maguire.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't even a question as to who was going to get the next ball. There was no covering defender or anything. It was John McGinn's ball all day long. Like, literally.
Yeah, I'm not saying, and
I want to bring up, I can't wait to do the tactics because I'm going to watch it again tomorrow. I'm going to do the, we will be having a tactics talk again, more based on how the team set up, more than our visceral kind of emotions today is what we're getting you through today. and our memories through the trouble and strife and ecstasy of that game. But there was no way there was another player winning that. There was no one within 15 yards to John McGinn, other than Maguire, who pulled him back. And that's why he pulled him back.
He leaves it to VAR. VAR are not going to give a fucking red card on the halfway line for Man United defending.
No, and they're not going to give a free. They're not just going to give a free.
Well, they can't give a free.
Unless United go up and score the other end. And the only way they give, the only reason they give a free there is because it affected the goal the other end. So
it's not going to happen. So... And I guarantee you, if there had been a goal scored the other end and they were giving us a free, it wouldn't have been a yellow card either, because they're clowns. Clowns, these guys who are put in charge of games. They're afraid of their fucking lives. We see it week in, week out. And you know what? We fucking beat them today. Sorry,
Paddy's in mid-season form already. I'm
really, really sorry if everybody is in their living room with their kids, because I shouldn't really be coursing. It's before the water.
Take it to a match, they'll hear worse.
I'll just do this and
that makes up for everything. That makes up for everything. Sean Mead, I flashed on up there from Sean Mead a moment ago. John McGinn's energy levels today were amazing. He led the pressing charge so well. And that's down to, guys, I know for a fact that Sean McGinn, we can call him Sean McGinn if we want, but John McGinn and Conor Hourihan, after the Euros, Conor Hourihan met up with John McGinn abroad when he was in isolation type situation, and they trained like maniacs together. I know the two of them did. And literally that was 4 days after Scotland were knocked out. So I think he just gave him the bare 2 or 3 days and gave himself that. And he went back training for Aston Villa. John McGinn is a treasure. We need to wrap our arms around him. We need to hug him. We need to love him. We need to make sure that he feels loved, because John McGinn is an absolute treasure for this football team. And he was when we were in the Championship. He was in the first year we were here. He was in the second year we were here. Last year, he was played in umpteen different positions. And I've used that word because I couldn't even begin to decide how many positions he was played in, how many different areas of the field he was played in. And it was unfair on him how many times his tactics and his positions were changed, because he was the only one that was able to get around the field with Ross Barkley in there. Not that Dean Smith did dirty on him or anything like that, but we just had a passenger on Ross Barkley. And this year we're seeing the beauty of him in a midfield three when he doesn't have to cover 4 quadrants of a midfield area. Yeah. Fair play to John McGinn. I thought he was outstanding. And I thought he was the best man on the field today. Head and shoulders above everyone.
I agree with you totally, but just eradicate that from the game. Take your oyer out on the referee if he's a prick.
Yeah.
Tell him what he is. Get in his face. Tell him what he is. Tell him he's a dickhead. Do whatever you got to do, but don't go flying into tackles and picking up silly yellow cards, because he did it. He did it against Southampton and picked up a nasty injury last year in exactly the same situation.
Yeah. No. Yes, exactly. But then again, if he gets a yellow card for calling the referee a prick, then that's a silly yellow card as well.
No, so, that's a great yellow card.
I knew you were going to say that.
He's there going, Paddy said you're a prick.
Yeah. That's what he said. I don't agree with him. I don't agree with that Irish guy in the internet, but he said that you're an absolute. Let's move on. So towards 2 strikers, Paddy, because to be honest with you, we've got 2 strikers that haven't scored in the last 3 games, if I'm not mistaken. But who cares?
Don't care. Don't care in the slightest. The reason I don't care is because we're winning matches. If we're not winning matches and we're not scoring goals, then I care. What I do care about, and what annoyed me more today, was the amount of offsides Ollie Watkins was caught. And I think that's a reflection of how high he's playing up the pitch with having Danny Ings with him. And that's something we need to work on. We just need to drop him that little bit deeper and work on his runs, because it's not acceptable to be going out and being off. It must have been 5 or 6, 7 times that he was offside, and it was grinding at me a little bit earlier in the game. So that's something
that, like, that was early in the game. Am I right in saying I don't remember too many offsides that he had? later in the game?
What do you think later in the game?
He was offside when Ings was fouled in the penalty area, and it was a stonewall penalty, but they didn't give the penalty because Ali Watkins was offside.
He was offside.
Yeah.
But it was mostly early in the game, and I think the reason he wasn't offside later in the game is that Man U were defending very deep, I should say. Yeah, and I think that gave him a little bit of an opportunity to make the runs a bit better. But look, he's got, if we're adapting the game to get him into a strike force of two people, he's going to need to adapt to that as himself. So that's just a small thing. I'm not having a go at him. I love Ollie Watkins. I love Danny Ings. The work rate is phenomenal. Goals will come for guys that work that hard, and they did for Ollie Watkins last season. If Ollie Watkins only scores 8, 9, 10 goals and Ings does the same, but the goals are coming from elsewhere. We've been through this many times in the podcast last year. People were losing their shit that Ollie Watkins didn't score goals. I don't care. They're coming from other angles. They only come for other angles when these guys are occupying the guys up front to make the space. So forget about that. Let them play their game. The goals will come. Danny Ings has scored 2. Absolutely fine. That's not a bad return for a new player adapting to a new system.
And you're right. And it was mentioned in the commentary I was watching, and I'd actually just text, I text somebody anyway, I don't know whether it was you or whether it was Dan Bardell, but I said, we're pressing, like, from where we came into the Premier League it was 3 years ago now. We defended literally on our 18-yard box. We invited pressure. We blocked shots. We were really hoping our goalkeeper was going to dig us out. And we didn't have Emi Martinez at the time. We had a mixture of Reina, Nyland, and Jed Steer. Last year we defended a bit more resolutely, small bit further up the field. But that was all. But then once we scored a goal, we retreated back to our penalty area again, to the safety of familiarity. This year we're pressing 25, 30 yards further up the field. We're pressing people. The press that Danny Ings and Ollie Watkins did in the first half was actually, like, it was criminal stuff what they were doing, to like the pressure they were putting the United players under. And yeah, they didn't get any goals, but I think the offsides are coming from that they're told stand on center halves now. Not stand off them, do not let them play around. I don't think Maguire liked it today. He was a big loss when he went off, because Lindelof was absolutely at sea when he came on. But I don't think they liked it. Varane was pretty quiet. He got a header at one stage in an attacking sense. But I think we played their two centre halves out of the game for periods. And we basically, like, we ran them around the field. But you mentioned as well in the last podcast, I think we did, last review podcast we did, about Danny Ings and Robbie Keane post 30. You know, the way that they were very similar. And today was a real good example of Danny Ings, but the Everton game was as well. But today was another good example of the link-up play that Robbie Keane used to do specifically for Ireland, because he felt he had to drop back, win the ball, and then try and get on it at the other end. Danny Ings did a good bit of that today as well. And he's such a selfless player. And, as you say, the goals will come for them. I think they'll come in fits and spurts, but who cares, as long as we're scoring goals and we're winning at the end of the day, you know. And if we win every game 1-0 from here on out, and we score from corners and we do a Sean Dyche in it, happy days. Get into Europe that way. Figure it out afterwards. Let's talk about the goal, Paddy. Jeez, we're 37 minutes into the game and we're actually only going to analyze the goal now. Yeah, I told you it's not chronological, but I suppose realistically, my thoughts on the goal were, Man United didn't do their homework, because it was exactly the same corner kick routine, except they had a man further out than they did last time. They essentially took John McGinn out of the way of where he was last time, and they put him, I think, in front of where House got the header. But all it was they changed the man running for the header, and it was Courtney House, and he ran into that spot. And what I wanted to get to earlier on, because I mentioned Douglas Luiz. Douglas Luiz's corners are bloody excellent. Like, where did that come from?
Well, sure, look, he's a footballer, you know. He should be.
Jack Grealish is a footballer, and his corners were shite. Oh,
yeah. But look, that's why we've got a set piece coach in there now. He's deciding who's taking these.
Yeah.
And he's very hands on, very, very hands on. you know, myself and Dale were talking about it on the phone there before we come on. Every time the camera goes to Dean Smith, it's like he's the assistant manager up there in his ear. Mm-hmm. Because more often than not, when it goes to the manager, it's because something they anticipate is going to happen or has just happened. So be that a set piece or a corner or whatever. So Austin McPhee is up in his ear, you know, or he's, you know, telling them what's going to happen, what they've worked on or what the code is or whatever. And, you know, Danny Murphy slagged off the fact that we had a set piece coach. And I just love to just meet him in the street and go, what do you think of our set piece coach now, Mr. Murphy? You sour faced.
Yeah, old scorer puss himself. Yeah.
Wasn't he had some gripe against us? But look,
he's brilliant. Just, he's looking for an extras role on EastEnders as well. Danny Murphy's looking for trying to be a hard man on the radio. Yeah. Do you know what? Get himself and Gabby Agbonlahor or into the studio next Monday morning and talk about. I might tune into TalkSport to listen to that because I'd say Gabby would give him 90 bags of it back, you know. So you're dead right, Paddy. You're dead right, Paddy. Look, Austin McPhee, and I said this probably 3 weeks ago, it doesn't matter whether we're good at set pieces as long as everyone keeps saying we're good at set pieces. That's the thing. It's,
I don't know,
it's
we like, have to be good at them too. Because
put it this way, it's a bonus if you're good at them. But it's like what is it, Kaiser Soze? It's like that without I won't even name the film just so that I don't give any spoilers to people who haven't seen it. But it's like Kaiser Soze. He said the best trick the devil ever played was convincing us he didn't exist. And the best thing you could play in a football field is convincing someone that you're absolutely brilliant at set pieces. Now I suppose, look, it's a double-edged sword because the way you will convince them is by scoring goals from them. Yeah. But we could go through a fallow patch where we don't score set pieces because it really is a lottery. It's not a lottery as such, but there's a lot of timing involved, is what I mean, with a set piece. So we will go through a vast amount of the season where we won't score.
Of course.
Paddy, was it last year? I said I'll sing a song if we score a goal from a corner. We scored one today. And
scored a few from set pieces anyway. There's one today. We scored two from a corner already this season.
I think we've scored two from a corner.
I'm sure already, they don't want to hear you singing every week, Neil. But
I don't know.
Might have one for you by the end of the season. If something isn't working, we might.
My agent was inundated with record deals that after that. I'm reliably informed, but no, I could never do that. I could never do the touring. I could never do the touring. Yeah. I take up too much space, and one of those tour buses would never suit me.
I don't. There's something I was going to say before you move on from the set pieces. I don't actually coach anymore. I'm semi-retired. I'm enjoying life now, and I'm enjoying having my weekends to myself. But I get it. I subscribe to all the videos and webinars and whatever. And for the odd time, I'd go on and have a look. But there was one on during the week, and it was about this team in France. They were, I think, a hypothetical team anyway, but they had a video automation of how they defended free kicks in 1920 and how they defended free kicks. Or they were playing against, say, example, it's Marseille versus Lyon. Lyon have suddenly got a set piece coach in there. They become renowned for attacking set pieces. They're scoring from them. And the average amount of extra deepness in the defense is 6 yards. So if you are well known for having a good set piece, where they were standing on the edge of the box, they're now standing on the penalty spot defending the free kick. And that's the difference. So if we can keep throwing out there that we're the set piece specialists, that amounts to an awful lot, because there's a big difference in getting a touch on the ball 12 yards out than it is 18 yards out. So that's the one thing I took out of that the other night. And it was all about a set piece coach that was working with this team in France, and everybody was defending 6 yards deeper. And it wasn't, he alluded to it in different countries. There was one team in the championship that he went through as well that had brought in a set piece coach and changed everything for them. So that's what we're gaining from having him in there. It's that little bit of uncertainty in the defense. So they drop a bit deeper in hope that the ball will drop a bit deeper and they can go to attack it rather than it going over their head, which is what they expected to happen.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Great. No, absolutely. It really does. It really does. And that's really interesting. Really interesting insight in that as well, because people just Like, I know people go, oh, well, what's the point in defending zonally and what's the point in defending man-to-man? And both of them definitely have their merits. I know zonal, like, a lot of the older pundits can't understand why you would have zonal marking. But, you know, all you've got to do is watch Rafa Benitez. Most of the people giving out about zonal marking. Sometimes I do, but just because I'm frustrated. But a lot of the people giving out about zonal marking haven't won half the things that Rafa Benitez has. Yeah, and I'm talking about managers and pundits. So, you know,
I think there's a time and a place for it. I completely understand zonal marking a free kick, which is swung in from the wing, say, as opposed to a corner, because I think you're just giving the opposition a little bit extra when you're zonal marking from a corner, because they'll pick and choose which hole they're going to put the ball into, especially if you've got a good set piece delivery. So it's a huge deal for us, and you know, long may it continue that we're making a difference. Mm-hmm. He seems to be freshening it up in every game, which is brilliant.
Exactly. Let's talk about the penalty, Paddy, because we're 44 minutes into this. But Emi Martinez seemed to give Peno Fernandez next existential crisis before the penalty. Emi also bullied Ronaldo for his Messi. And the reason I skipped over it at the start, because we talked about Emi Martinez and the way Emi Martinez is the father of the group, and the shithousery that went on around that penalty was brilliant. He went out and he was saying, why are you taking the penalty? Why don't you take it? Why don't you take it, you coward? Come on, take the penalty. Take the penalty. Yeah. See how good you are. And like, just talk about boss mode. Like, exactly. Like, he was just, take the penalty. He was like, I don't want him to take the penalty. He's useless. I'll save his penalty. You take the penalty. I want you. You say you're the best in the world. My mate Messi's the best in the world. You said, you know, it was proper gangster is what he was.
And it was just incredible to watch Ronaldo's face. He just staring back at him going, fuck, how do I reply to this?
Yeah.
Because there's no response to that. You've just got to stand there and take it. But he didn't walk out of the box. He just stood there as if to say, well, there's a little bit of uncertainty here. Maybe I will take it.
And the funny thing was, a couple of Villa players got around the penalty spot at that stage. Fred was in there. Fred was in there pushing people away from the referee, whereas Fred and McTominay were roaring at the referee, pushing people away. And then, of course, Sourball, Solskjaer comes out and says, oh, they were awful, the carry-on of the Aston Villa players at the penalty. No, they weren't awful. What they were doing was what Man United have done since year dot. To referees, to every official, at every single contentious decision. Yes, there was probably shades of Martin Keown when he jumped up and removed Van Nistelrooy's face at the very when Van Nistelrooy missed a penalty at the very end of the game against Arsenal. I think it was in the invincible year. But get over it, Solskjaer. Absolutely, genuinely get over it. We're as much entitled to fight for our right to do whatever we want on that field as long as it's within the laws as anyone else. If you don't like it, you know what you can do? Cry harder. And that's what I said online. Just cry harder, Solskjaer, because you're in trouble. You're under pressure. Your board have backed you with a bazillion euros. They've backed you with as much money as you ever wanted. They've brought in the greatest goal scorer. And you know what he did today? He might as well have had both hands down his pants, because he did absolutely nothing today. He did absolutely sweet FA against Courtney House. And you're just embarrassed. And that's why you came out with the drivel that you came out with afterwards, because you're an embarrassed little man who knows that he's not a very good manager, and he's over his club that loves him. And guess what? You're going to get sacked soon, because the fans don't even like you. So here we go, Solskjaer. Keep it for someone else. Stop having goals at Klopp as well before the matches. Stop trying to intimidate referees. You got your penalty. You didn't score it. You got what you wanted. Guess what? Cry harder. Look inside. Train the team better. And guess what? Just shut up, essentially, because I can't stand that shite. Give us the credit. We played better than you did, and the majority of it is your fault, because that team was incoherent and you had all the talent you could ever need to put out in a football field. So look inside yourself and think about who the problem was here. It certainly wasn't anyone on the field. It was you.
And Ronaldo. Look, loads of people sent me that interview today, and I'm going to be completely honest. I wouldn't watch it, because I don't want to throw back to the 90s where Fergie came out after every game and intimidated the referee.
That's all he wanted to do. He wanted to make sure Ferguson saw, look, Daddy Ferguson, I'm a big, hard boy. I'm able to go after people after the game.
Yeah, I have a fucking voice. At one stage, the camera went onto Ferguson, and he was on his phone frantically tapping away.
Hello, and Antonio Conte, are you ready to come yet?
I said to Stephen, what's he doing? I said, probably making a substitution.
Yeah.
But look, Solskjaer is under pressure. He's fucking useless. He's beyond useless. To be given that amount of talent and lose to West Ham, lose to Young Boys of Bern, lose to Aston Villa, cry me a fucking river, to come out and accuse us of gamesmanship. Talk about the pot calling the fucking kettle black. Fucking disgrace. The shit that they've done under his watch in the last 2 years, and he's accusing us of gamesmanship. You know what? Emi Martinez, take a fucking bow. Tonight was absolutely outrageous. And I loved every minute of it. Roaring at Ronaldo, why are you not taking it? Why are you not taking it? Are you afraid to take it? Brilliant. Absolutely outstanding.
My father is going to murder me for all the swearing we've done in this podcast.
Don't even, I've done all the swearing.
It's a 1 in 12 year occurrence that we have here. And I think
and my father's not watching. He's too busy celebrating Man City winning the league.
They were singing Championes after the game today, but look, I suppose they are still champions of the league. So, anyway, let's get back to some comments. I really, if you didn't notice, I went on a Paddy-esque rant there, and I really need to get off my chest because I thought that he was entitled. I thought he came across entitled. I thought it was embarrassing from him. I thought he came across as dismissive of other teams that we shouldn't be in their way, and. I thought it was borderline unprofessional for him. He can talk about these things, all right. He can talk about the offside. Yeah, that's probably a valid thing to talk about. He's fine on that. But to talk about the way the Aston Villa players carried on, he played in the team with Roy Keane. He wants to tell us that we were out of order. He can go and jump is what he can do.
It reminds me of the time that Ferguson came out fearing for the safety of Robin van Persie. Remember, he got hit in the face with the ball.
Yeah.
Fucking anyway. Hang your head in shame. You've dictated for so many years. You can fuck off now because you're fucking. You've no business at the top table of English football because there's so many better run teams up there with better managers and better players that aren't a crowd of whingers. Hernandez, Pogba, Ronaldo. They don't get their way. All they do is whinge. But cry me a river, baby, because we got the 3 points.
I feel like the two of us have really invoked the spirit of Eamon Dunphy tonight. I think RT's top brass might be calling us coming to an Eamon Dunphy on it sometime. lads, we're going to have to wrap this up very soon. But before we do that, I'm going to go back to some of the comments there. Paul says that Southgate needs to get cash in the England team before it's too late.
No.
I'd actually...
Go in the England team, you move out of Aston Villa. Fuck off. He's Polish.
That's exactly what I was going to say too. Yeah. Play for...
Sorry, Paul. I didn't mean...
I think he's good enough to play for England, though.
Yeah.
It's a hard one because he's got the likes of Reece James and he's got the likes of Kyle Walker. Kyle Walker's coming probably to the end of it and stuff like that. But then again, Southgate bringing 6 or 7 right backs to the tournament, he might get to go to a tournament as well. You never know. Supermark says if Tuanzebe plays well for us, United will want him back. Houses are only is our player, so maybe he needs to be kept happy. If I'm not mistaken, Tuanzebe only signed an extra 1 year extension to his contract. After next year, so I think he'll have 2 years left in his contract. But I think the players hold on.
At this stage, they know too, and Xavi's a player. Yeah. They just can't pigeonhole him into defense, which costs the bones of 200 million. So they're pawning him out to whoever will have him in the hope that he will become a player that looks the value of Varane or Maguire. Which, do you know what? Put Tuanzebe in there instead of Maguire any day. I don't rate Maguire at all. I don't give two shits about him, but I don't rate him at all. If they take him back, they take him back. There's no, as far as I know, there's no option to buy. With regards to House, I have a feeling the Courtney House is going to look for an exit at the end of this season, unless we can guarantee him football. He's probably at the age now where he needs a little bit of football. And who knows, maybe it is that back three that he fits into. But at the moment, I still think Tuanzebe is a better option.
Well, look, the realistically, the club will have done right by him because the club will have given him a platform. If he does move on to another club, I'll be absolutely distraught. But profit is profit. You know, at the end of the day, 3 million might turn into 12 or 15.
Well, it won't because he'll be out of contract. So he'll go for free unless we sign him up. But he's out of contract at the end of the season. So I'd sign him up. I think he does enough for us every time he comes in to warrant them being signed up. Yeah. It all comes down to whether he wants to or not.
Yeah, absolutely. Seb says, great movement for Courtney for the goal. You don't win anything with granddad's Cavani. I hope that one doesn't come back to bite us. Last time we beat United. Rod, good to see you. Rod says, Man United in no position to whine about gamemanship. I think exactly. That came across in my rant there. I tried to stare. What's this? Is this true?
I think he changed it. It was offside, was it?
It was. Yeah, we finished 3-3. Oh my goodness. Yeah,
it was the fourth goal was offside.
Where are we here now? Predicted John Crawford predicted a 91st minute penalty for United in last night's podcast. I wish I'd put a bet in it. I wish you did too as well. there's a lot of people talking about the rant here as well. loving the rant. Well said. What a rant. All it would be in tears hearing that, Neil. I don't usually lose my cool and give it both parts. I hate conflict. I hate conflict, but then again, I used to love kind of crippling fellas, not crippling them in literal terms, in theoretical terms on the field. But a lot of people are saying that the rant is good. Yeah, look, guys, I think we're going to leave it at that because we're coming up on 54 minutes. This has been a real nice chat. We've got a lot of things off our chest. This is kind of one of those things where you take a photograph on a night out and you go, yeah, I might delete that one in the morning.
Asher, look, it's nice to get a positive reaction.
You know, absolutely. Look, and it's not often that we go 2 feet in. Well, it is on Roy Keane, but on other teams' players and on other teams' and referees we do as well, and pundits. Actually, it's very often we go 2 feet in.
Make no apologies for that, Neil. If somebody needs to be gone in two-footed, we'll go in two-footed. Exactly. We don't generally do it to our own players.
But no.
We'll certainly do it to a fella who they were singing about being at the wheel for so long in the first half, and he might not be at the wheel for much longer. Yeah. And cry me a river, kid, because you're at nothing.
Yeah. They don't call him the babyface assassin for nothing. There's tracks of tears. Anyway, lads, thanks so much. And ladies, thank you so much for tuning in. It's been an absolute pleasure. Look, it's been a great day. There's been a lot of emotion in this today. 12 years since we beat United, as we say, and hopefully it won't be that long again before we beat them again. Hopefully we do double over them this year when we bring them back to Villa Park. I think there'll be a bit of needle in this because I think that this game somehow will be built up to be a grudge match the next time they arrive on the Villa Park by Sky or by BT, whoever it is. And you know what? Bring it on. We'll see what happens. We mightn't win. Like, it's amazing within the Premier League. We might win another game between now and then. We might win 10 games between now and then, but I'm really enjoying following this club this year. It's been a roller coaster already, and we've only been six games into the campaign. So we'll be back again next weekend for the Spurs game, and hopefully we do one in Spurs as well, because we do owe them one.
Will I give a little spoiler alert about next weekend, Neil?
What? There's no game?
The team sheet tantrum. One of us will be standing outside the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Oh, yes. Yes, I forgot all about that. I was going, wait a minute, did I get my dates wrong? There's no game next weekend? What? When's the international break? The international break's after the Wolves game. In case you haven't noticed, I do like to second guess myself an awful lot. But we'll be back next week and we'll have a live on location Paddy over the Spurs Stadium, and I'm really looking forward to that. But listen, everybody, enjoy the rest of your afternoon. I'm going to go down. I'm going to eat my dinner, and I'm going to enjoy a few more bottles to celebrate this for the end of the night. But thanks so much, everybody, for your company for the last 57 minutes. Hope we didn't scare the kids too much, as I say. And we'll definitely be putting the explicit lyrics title on this one before we put it up. But really appreciate all your company. Thanks for everything you do for the podcast. And all that's left to say is up the Villa.
Up the Villa.
podcast network.